Sasaki known as the monster of the Reiwa era, basically saying once in a generation talent. Sasaki, nasty, strike three swinging. The 1-2 fools Menchik, second strikeout of the first. The 0-2 pitch gets Mujik a strikeout to begin the top of the second for Sasaki. He strikes out swinging, back to back to begin the second, three in a row for Sasaki. Strike three swinging. That's number five so far tonight for Sasaki.
The ability that he has to do this, to make it look sometimes like a slider. 91, 93, sometimes even 93 in that splitter.
That's three. And number six for Sasaki. Strike three.
That is number seven for Roki Sasaki.
Strikeout number eight. And an exclamation mark on Roki Sasaki and his World Baseball Classic debut.
On what is a very emotional day for him and for this nation. Absolutely superb.
Roki Sasaki, there's a reason why his nickname is Monster. He will dice you. When he thinks that he's going to go hard, he'll go hard. He'll locate with that fastball. But for me, his splitter is the one that has me mesmerized.
Rosarena strikes out swinging, 1-0-2.
Boy, Mexico has their hands full, that's for sure. That's the first batter, and that's what he's throwing.
Two down, bases empty. Meneses waiting the two-strike pitch. He struck him out in the dirt, the splitter. And he struck him out. Just never deviated.
Sasaki has definitely made the adjustment, saying, no, we're not going to give you the fastball anymore. We're just going to give you all the splits.
Statcast doesn't know what to do with him. They're calling that pitch a cutter. We know it's his splitter. There just aren't many pitches like it.
They call him Monster for a reason, and he's been fantastic.
We're back, and joining me, it's become almost like a yearly rite of passage here at the Talking Mets podcast. Jim Allen. Jim's out in Japan. He's been kind enough to spend some time. It's a day later, so we know that. I always make this joke, Jim. It's a bad joke. We know the world hasn't ended because you're ahead of us over there, right? But you guys could check out Jim on Twitter at JBallAllen, JBallAllen.com, and the Japan Baseball Podcast. He's been a great help for us as we've talked to him over the last couple of years about Yamamoto and Senga, a little bit about the Ohtani sweepstakes. And now we've got a very interesting scenario unfolding this winter with Roki Sasaki and maybe a couple other names popping out there. And the Sasaki situation, Jim, here is a little bit different. So welcome to the program, and let's start here. There's always been confusion because the old posting system that Hideki Arabu and guys like that signed under many, many moons ago is long gone. Things have changed a little bit over the last decade or so with MPB and Major League Baseball. So really, it's surprising to me. The Japanese culture is very much, at least from an outsider, an American perspective, about respecting the team, respecting the rules, kind of waiting your turn. That's the expression I got. Sasaki's kind of thrown that out. So let's just start there. He really doesn't, there's really no reason for his team to be posting him. And is it a bit of a surprise in some circles, at least here in the United States?
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise here. I first heard this, I guess, last the summer of 2023 when MLB teams I talk with said they expected Sasaki to be posted. Now, I don't know how new of a thing it is. The older I get, the more contacts I get, but I learned that agents want to talk to the MLB teams and obviously to get them ready so that they can prepare their international plans and also their bid packages. You know, you don't want to be like the Red Sox were with Ohtani and have 5 days to put everything together. So the teams know they're coming in advance. And so that was a heads up. But I was surprised because I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought Sasaki would not go until he was 25 because that's when it makes the most sense financially for both a pitcher, and I'll specify a pitcher, and the team. And the reason for that is the CBA then categorizes 6-year pros over 25 or over as international professional free agents instead of amateurs. So I was surprised, but once I heard it, and I heard the I heard that Wasserman was connected with it, I realized this wasn't just a smokescreen because of Wasserman's reputation, particularly among Japanese players, is really, really good. So I realized it was very likely. And then the question is, if he's going to move when he's 23, and posting requires team permission. It's not a free agency. It's not a right. It's basically the team saying, we'll post you and we'll get some money back.
Very little, by the way, in this scenario.
In this case, yes. Players under 25 have no hope of getting really anything other than a minor league contract. And, you know, they could, if they took the maximum amount of international signing pool money that a team is allowed to give out, over $10,000, they could get about $10 million from the smallest market team. And the Marines would, therefore, are limited to about a maximum of $2 million.
Yeah. Not a lot of money for them to do much with. Not like, you know, one of some of the big names out there.
Well, no, because obviously the biggest posting fee in the original two, Daisuke Matsuzaka and Yu Darvish, both went for over $50 million to their Japanese team. Then they changed the rules, so it was a $20 million flat fee. Well, not exactly, but they limited it to $20 million, and then they made it a $20 million flat fee, and now it's calculated based on the salary. So anyway, yeah, it was a shock. But once I realized he was going, then it was all a question in Japan of how it happened. And now this is the kind of thing where MLB and Japan are really, really, really different, is that they can give out, players can have contracts that are essentially secret, and lots of players have them. Every player with any bit of leverage has got a side contract that says, you'll release me at a certain point in my career or under certain conditions, or you'll give me an apartment, or you'll give me a car, you'll give my relatives tickets to this many first class tickets to Japan to come and see me, or whatever. Okay, so lots of players have them. Virtually all import players have them. But for a player to demand to be posted early, which apparently Sasaki I won't say he absolutely had an agreement, because we'll never see it. We'll never see the document that makes Sasaki look like a selfish, greedy teenager. And we'll never see that agreement that makes the Marines look stupid. No, it's right. In nobody's best interest.
It's never going to be leaked. I don't think not like the professional baseball here where an agent or somebody in the front office. I mean, it's a gossip tree out here in the United States. It's changing a little bit. I have to say, I think the teams are buttoning up a little bit, but I think for those, and I've dealt a little bit with those who have had business dealings with Japan, culturally, it's very structured, very much about, there's a lot of nationalism there, and there's no way a Japanese employee, at least, again, I'm talking as an American, I have to put that out there. I don't want to make it sound like I'm an insider like you. A Japanese employee will not make his employer of the same descent look foolish. So this is pretty, I did not expect this. And I guess then before we get directly to Sasaki, first, I think number one, you're seeing an influx of talent from Japan going into the United States. And yep. I think it's going to continue. I mean, look at, you know, everybody talks about Yamamoto. Imanaga was the guy that had the big season and he looked good, and he's got great numbers. And you take away the game against the Mets, actually, there they beat him up a little bit. He has even better numbers at that point. Part of me during the season was like, maybe that's the guy the Mets should have pursued instead of Yamamoto, you know. But I guess we'll see. But you're seeing this influx of talent, and you got to wonder, with a different generation, a younger generation, Gen Z, whatever you want to call Sasaki, will you start to see more of this? Because there's so much fame and money. And obviously, professional baseball, MLB, is the zenith in their eyes. That's a big difference from 30, 40 years ago, where it was they were never going to come over here unless it was at the end of their careers.
Right. Well, in fact, that's the main reason they can go is because 30 years ago, in fact, 31 years ago, okay, let's put this way. 31 years ago, free agency started in Japan. And it started because not like an MLB where there was a labor strife and there were arbitration issues and legal issues. It started because one team, the most powerful team in Japan, wanted to, liberate the biggest name veteran players from other teams and offer them a seat at the most, you know, with the most famous team in Japan, the Omiuri Giants. And so they said, let's have free agency. So 9 years, you can come and play for us. And we don't care about any of the other 11 teams. Well, the problem was that allowed Japanese players to go to MLB. But the reason they did this was because it never occurred to them that the best players in Japan could play in MLB.
Yeah.
And MLB was exactly the same. They never dreamed the best players in Japan could compete with the best players in MLB.
Interrupt you. There was always all-star teams going over to Japan.
Sure.
Even back in the 80s, I remember as a kid, and they competed very well. That's why it was always, now there may be some xenophobia there, arrogance, American arrogance, but the Japanese have always, forget the World Baseball Classic, that's recent, have always competed with their professional counterparts.
Well, those All-Star Series were very valuable, and Sadaharu Oh has said that they were a really key to raising the level of Japanese baseball, and I agree with that. But, you know, there was the first one I watched in Japan was 1986, and Davey Johnson, who was a former Yomiuri Giant and who was really eager to – he had a bad experience in Japan – and he was really eager to rub salt in the wound. So
that's right around. Yep. Right after the 86 World Series, the arrogant Mets, Davey. I've met Davey. I've interviewed Davey. That's Davey. He's a competitive guy. I'm not surprised to hear that.
So instead of typically a lot of these teams, especially now, tend to be some young stars, some really promising young stars, a few older guys who really want to go because they had a good experience in Japan. There'll be some really, really good players, but then there'll be a lot of guys who are unavailable because they just don't want to go. You know, they've been there, done that. So the teams have tended to be not as strong as they used to, but Davey Johnson picked the absolute cream of the crop, and they went over to Japan, and every game was like 11-13-1. It was a massacre. It was Nightmare on Elm Street. Okay, so we had that, and we saw that. But 6 years later, or 8 years later, it's Hideo Nomo coming over, and teams are going like, holy moly. And this guy, and it's not like Nomo was a kid. His arm had been through the ringer before he got to MLB. He pitched 4 seasons of 200-plus innings.
Violent delivery.
Violent delivery. And
to this day, that's such, I mean, nobody talked about mechanics back then, but violent, horrible mechanics, horrible.
Yeah. So
arm injury waiting to happen. And he pitched deep into his career and compared to today's pitcher. It's crazy, you know.
And again, it was a little different game in the 90s than it is now. So that's always changing. But the point was, as soon as Nomo went over, they went, oh man, we are done. So Japanese players started wanting to come, and they had to make a posting system. So Japanese teams, actually, Irabu was one of the reasons they made the posting system.
Right.
Because
it was a Steinbrenner, yep.
Yeah, because his team had an agreement with a working agreement with the San Diego Padres. And so they essentially traded him to the Padres, and he didn't particularly want to go to the Padres. So anyway, long story short, it has been this beacon, and it's an uncontrollable flow to some degree. But here's the thing. All the guys coming over here now, because they're on TV every day, every Shohei Ohtani game with the Angels and the Dodgers has been broadcast live in Japan. So that's And then when Otani's not playing, they might have a Darvish game on, or they'll have another random MLB game on. But they've got MLB on TV every single morning. When Nomo pitched, it was once a week, you know, five times a month, whatever. And then when he stopped playing, the game cut off. But now with cable and all this and all the information, Japanese kids are really wired into how well Japanese players are playing in MLB. And it used to be that NPB, Nippon Professional Baseball, was the absolute summit of their aspirations. You know, they wanted just to be an NPB. They just wanted to get the minor, you know, the contract and go up to the first team and compete at the, you know, play in the All-Star game and play in the Japan Series and win championships. And that was it. And now they're going, you know, we can rise above that. And that's really important for two reasons. And Japanese baseball, since really the 1970s and 80s and early 90s, went through a big quality control thing. And they thought they had could perfect baseball. And they decided that if you're this body type, you're this kind of player. And if you're this kind of player, you play this position and you play it a certain way. And this is how you swing. And this is how you run. And this is how you field. And there's no exceptions. So they tried to put every single individual baseball player in the country in a pigeonhole them, put them in a bucket or a box. And it doesn't, you know, life doesn't work like that. Ichiro Suzuki, they tried to put him in a box and he said, I'm my own box. And they didn't like that. So for 2 years, they stuck him on the minor leagues. They kept him in the minor leagues while he just tore every pitcher in the Japan's Western League, a new one. So Nomo the same. Teams didn't want Nomo because of his delivery. So what I'm saying is that because of Japanese, that's one thing, and that that tendency to want to put make every player one size fits all or put everybody in an individual group. The success of the guys in MLB, Ichiro and Nomo and Shohei Ohtani, tells you these guys are different. They are unique. They're not like anybody else. Okay, so that's important because these kids now are thinking, I can be unique too. I can go outside the box. Okay, so that's one. And the other thing is that Japanese baseball is very, very into fundamentals. And they're very into intense practice as an essence of the game. You know, practice is the flip side of the game for them. Kids probably practice 10 times as much as they play in Japan because there's so little ability to play. So they're used to it. And so when these highly motivated, well-educated kids, athletic kids who are less bound to the old restrictions of Japanese training methods and who are more likely to be coached by guys who are also following the developments in the game, we're starting to see these kids who are phenomenal athletes, who have aspirations as high as the moon, who are thinking outside the box. And I think that Yamamoto is part of this. Yamamoto is part of this next generation, and Sasaki is too. These kids are going to be incredible, and they're going to start flooding. They're already flooding NPB with these incredibly talented athletes. So some people worry that Japan's being hollowed out, but these guys going to MLB are filling the ranks of Japanese baseball with incredible athletes.
Absolutely. Jim Allen here, Japanese Baseball Podcast. Big time information coming out of Japan. You can follow him on X, Twitter, whatever you call it now. So Sasaki, Pedro Martinez stats. I got the Baseball Reference page up. Doesn't walk a lot of guys. Whip under one. throws hard. Obviously, there's nothing that you see statistically that makes you have a concern. We said the same thing with Yamamoto. How is he going to translate? Before we get to where he's going to go and the chances of, particularly here, we're a Mets-centric show that the Mets have here. Is this? We talked about Yamamoto as if he's the next Pedro Martinez or Roger Clemens. Is Sasaki that guy? Is he the guy? And how do you feel he's going to translate for whoever signs him?
Well, he's not as mature as a pitcher as Yamamoto was. Even Yamamoto, when he was a 20-year-old, was a more mature pitcher than Sasaki is now. Why that is, I can't say, but I would crack that to Justin Yamamoto being so incredibly smart and in tune with his body compared to most human beings. So Sasaki has, however, the ability to exceed that. He has he has what scouts like, which is he's got that the physical potential. He's got a very large frame. He's got big shoulders. He's still relatively skinny, but you know that from an outsider's point, he looks like he could become larger and more powerful. So they all like that. And before we even get to that, he throws he has in the past sat close to 99. Now this year he didn't. There's a story to that. I'm a writer, so there's a story to everything. But
that's the beauty of baseball. I more so, and I don't want to romanticize here, but more so than the other sports. And I love the NBA. I love professional basketball. Baseball's more of a storytelling, better for this kind of format than, in my opinion. I'm biased, of course.
Okay, well, let's be biased. You know, no problem with that. That's how you earn points in this business.
Sure.
Being biased, sure. I think. So basically, the concern for him is his fastball. And while everybody, you know, that's the thing that scouts drool over, that and the splitter. His fastball is not a swing and miss pitch like Senga's was. And without getting into the details, basically guys will foul it off in Japan because they're almost timing it. But the reason they're fouling it off is they're not swinging under it unless they're, you know, expecting a splitter or something. They're not going to swing under his fastball. They tend to look 40 throws at half the time, so it's kind of a waste of time to look for the splitter. But yeah, it's 100 miles an hour when he wants it to be, and he can't get guys to miss. So that's kind of a problem. That has to do with, you know, the way it spins out of his hand. Now, an MLB team might fix that or might not. I don't know, but it's both a potential limit and a potential upside because it's something he conceivably could learn to do better. The other pitches, of course, the splitter had a kind of a down year this year, and I think there are two reasons for that. He hasn't mastered the command of either his fastball or his splitter. But this year he focused mostly on throwing a sweeper.
Like everybody else, that's the wave now. It's a slider. Yep. Let's call it what it is. They changed the name from a slider.
Okay, yeah, well. Yeah,
that's my thing. I'm like, all of a sudden now I see sweeper and I'm like, well, when did it change? When did the world change? Like, you know.
Well, yeah, it basically changed from being a,
they don't use the term two-seamer anymore. What is it? It's a cutter. I can't remember what they're saying. So
okay, well, it essentially went from being a 45, you know, something that dove to something that looks more like a
east-west.
Yeah, exactly. An east-west, big, breaking, horizontal curveball kind of thing.
Sure.
So that was, again, when I first heard that at the WBC, I'm going, what's a sweeper? Anyway,
here you are. You cover baseball for a billion years, and you sound dumb, or you feel dumb sometimes. You're like, you know, they changed the game overnight, and where was I when it happened?
Man, I feel dumb every day. Don't put that one on me.
Let me tell you, sometimes I do too. I could tell you that.
So anyway, that was his focus this year. That was one part. I heard somebody else call it a dip in his performance. It was a dip in a sense, but the fact that he showed mastery of a new pitch. I mean, he'd thrown a slider before, but this is a, sort of an this was a big level up for him. The dip was basically because his velocity was not where it was in the previous 3 years. And the reason, I think there's a really good reason for that, and that his, it was so funny, but his manager, Masato Yoshi, former Met.
Remember him well. Another Mets connection.
Has a master's degree in coaching. Literally, he has a physical education degree in coaching from Japan's big sports. It's not technically a sports science university, but it's the best. It might be the best sports science program in Japan. And he's working on his PhD now, he said.
Underrated pitcher for the Mets. I mean, nice number 3-4 and help pitch them to a championship series. He's one of the members, yeah.
He was very good in Japan, and he's a terrific guy. And he said in March to me, when I had some rare access these days, he said, you know, a lot of kids coming out of high school, they're too strong for their joints. And then I forget the doctor who's doing so many of the Tommy John's surgeries now, I think he's just retired, said more or less the same thing. He said, these guys under 26 who are throwing 100 miles an hour, it's really dangerous. And all of a sudden, that was March, and then Sasaki comes out and he's not hitting 100. He's barely hitting 100. He's basically sitting now at 95, 96 instead of 99.
Which is plenty. I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I watch Edwin Diaz go out there, throw 97. I'm like, oh, what's wrong with him? I'm like, that's still a lot of cheddar. We forget that. A lot of cheddar.
Well, there was I think that was a thing. I think he was intentionally dialing it down. And so this all struck me. His debut, he said, I wasn't able to throw hard, so I'm not gassed, when he threw 106 pitches or something in his debut. Or it was 86. I don't remember. But I'm going, that's weird, because typically your major league pitcher throws the ball as hard as he can command it. Right? That's today's baseball. So if he was only able to throw 98, that doesn't mean he's not going to be tired. It meant he wasn't able to throw 98. But what I realized in retrospect was that he wasn't able to throw hard because his manager had told him not to throw hard. So that's sort of the whole story of Sasaki. They've been protecting his arm. He had issues in high school. The low bone density is the most famous, but his body is not as mature as a typical 23-year-old.
It sounds like there's going to be development.
Yes.
So depending on who he signs with, and I think this is the thing that a lot of fans forget, Yamamoto, he got hurt, so that was part of it, but he was not as advertised this year. Not saying he won't be, not as advertised. He wasn't Garrett Cole. He wasn't Jacob DeGrom. He wasn't Zach Wheeler. He was a young pitcher just getting his feet wet in American professional baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Sasaki is a guy that's going to come, and I'm leading to where some of your reporting about what market he would go into, is going to get a lot of money eventually, not right away, a lot of money. He's going to be expected to impact the team right away, even though he's essentially going to be a minor leaguer or a guy on international minor leaguer. And if he does not perform as expected, as the hype, there's going to be disappointment. Now, I wasn't out in L.A. I don't know what they said about Yamamoto. He pitched fairly well in the postseason. Dodgers win a championship. Well, bygones are bygones. So I think that's important. You're not getting Garrett Cole. You're not getting Jacob DeGrom. You're not getting Zach Wheeler day one. The hope is he will turn into that. And in a lot of ways, Ohtani may have ruined things for us, because Ohtani was fairly good from day one on both sides of the ball. So where do you see that part of it? Because everyone's assuming this is a 20-game winner coming into the league.
Oh, no. No, he's never. The Japanese season, the regular season, is now 143 games long. So he needs 143 innings to qualify for an ERA title. He's never done it. He'd never won 10 games before this year. His ERA was up, and I think this was all the adjustments he was making. So I look at the 2024 as an adjustment season for him. The ERAs across Japan plummeted this year because the first half of the season, the ball was sort of a reverse analogy to the 2018 MLB ball, where the seams
they juiced the ball, right? Basically,
well, the yarn they used to stitch the covers on was stronger than it had previously been, and the ball was more aerodynamic.
Yep.
So and this one was the opposite. Yep. This one was opposite. The balls were coming apart at the seams. They switched their manufacturing process and accidentally ended up with a ball that was as dead as dirt for the first half of the season. So
it's 1909 all over again.
It was exactly. Home run rates dropped by about 50%. It was really bad. And then the second half of the season, they fixed that because I guess they realized in April that it wasn't going to work. So they fixed things and they got new balls. They got more similar balls in play by the middle of the season, but still his ERA went up and everybody else's went down. But those things have to be taken in context. And I think he is a work in progress. You know, even with the so-called dip, none of the MLB teams are saying, "Yeah, we don't want him anymore."
No,
he's still top of the list. So, I think every team wants him, but he's not going to be. I don't think any team is dumb enough in this respect, in a scouting and baseball technology sense, to think that he is MLB high level pitchability right now.
He's not a project, but he's got some work to be done. And now everybody, and you really talked a little bit about it earlier. Nomo comes over back in the 90s. It's the Dodgers, and Otani's with the Dodgers, and Yamamoto goes to the Dodgers, and you keep hearing, and you have to wonder, similar to how the Dodgers were in the Dominican Republic back in the 80s, where they built that academy, are they building this Yankees-like reputation in the Far East where now you mention all these young kids growing up, watching Ohtani on TV, watching Yamamoto on TV, watching the Dodgers, wearing Dodgers hats, and all of a sudden now the Dodgers have this competitive advantage where they are falling over themselves to go play in LA. And LA is a great city. It's a little closer to Japan. The weather's better. And they're going to make money so that, you know, the cost of living doesn't really matter to these guys, right? So is it fait accompli? Should the Mets back out? Should the Yankees back out? Even though Sasaki could sign with anybody because the playing field is a little bit normalized. Should we just pack our bags and Andrew Friedman and the Dodgers are going to get another one? And before you know it, they're going to be MPB USA at some point. It's going to be that'd be interesting, right? A whole Japanese rotation. It'd be cool. But look, you seem to disagree in your writings. I brought it up over on X. Talk a little bit about that.
Okay, well, that's now. 10 years ago, it was the Mariners. A lot of the Japanese players wanted to play for the Mariners. They went through a stretch for about 25 years where they always had a Japanese player on the MLB roster. So, you know, it's not permanent. Nothing's etched in stone.
That's a good point. The Mariners had Sasaki. They had the closer. His name is...
Yeah. Kazuhiro Sasaki, the closer. Yeah. They had Hisashi Wakuma. They Mune Nori Kawasaki went to the Mariners on a tryout only because he wanted to play with Ichiro. And Ichiro is still there as a batting consultant and assistant to the team president, and that's still an appeal. But now, when I said that, I can only say someone who's advising Sasaki The logic, now this person said a small market would be preferable, but part of that is the backstory that for the last year and a half, ever since news started to break that Sasaki wanted to be in MLB and might go before, you know, might force his team's hand, you know, might be very un-Japanese and not wait his turn. Basically, the old guys in the media started sharpening their knives and saying, well, he's a gutless wonder. He's a whiner and a complainer.
Sounds like the United States, my friend. Nothing's really different, huh? We're all the same. We look different. We have different cultures. In the end, we have the same BS. So all said and done.
Yeah, that's the baseball system, indeed. So it was like Mets comes to, you know, is a little bit of that Mets experience in Chiba. So, but national media, all the former players saying, oh, he's mentally weak and he's this weak and he's that weak. And, you know, he was weak in every possible way. And that has continued. In fact, that's amped up now. But there's another component to that, which is I can say that Scott Boras has basically, according to one source, has accused the Dodgers of basically already arranging to have Sasaki play for them. And that was, you know, that played well in Japan because they're starved for news. Anybody who says anything, regardless of the source, it's suddenly news. So people think it's going to be LA, and you know, it could be LA. It could be LA because that's where Sasaki wants to go. I don't know. I don't care. Okay, I would prefer he go to the San Francisco Giants, but
you've always been a big, to be fair, you've always felt the Giants are a good spot. We talked about that with Senga a couple of years ago, even with Yamamoto, you've always felt San Francisco is a good spot. Clearly, well, it's a big Asian culture. Spot. I mean, it's always, you know, back going all the way back, right?
It's not good for the players right now because the team has been kind of a clown. I mean, the front office and the team, I don't know if it's the front office or the planning, but the execution has been something of a
They've made some front office changes now, so, you know, we'll see where that goes.
Indeed. So
Buster Posey,
maybe not the most settled situation. And I think if you're coming over, you want something settled. So it might be that Sasaki wants to go, but some of the people around him are saying, look, why don't you just go someplace where you can sort of sort things out and work things out and be your best self. So
that ain't the Mets in New York. Bobby Valentine has connections here to the Marines. And Steve Cohen made a great impression to Yamamoto for at least what he said. He could be being polite. That's the Japanese culture. The Mets have proven a lot of doubters over the last 12 months of they're not the same organization they've always been. I think Billy Epler had a nice connection to Japan. He's not there anymore, but maybe
is he still with the Mets?
No, he's no longer with the Mets because of the whole injured list situation.
Okay.
And Senga, I don't know what to think about Senga as a recruiter. Senga has his own issues with health that he's had to work through. But, you know, the Mets have some desirable points. They don't have the pressure-free environment. They are competing for a championship. They very well might be putting themselves on the map in a big-time way if they sign Juan Soto. It's interesting. This could be a situation where out of the blue, similar to Otani, who went to the Angels, not necessarily a small market, but everyone thought he was going to the Yankees, if you remember, when he came over. Maybe he signs in Baltimore. Maybe Tampa, as much as people laugh about the ballpark and they have no home right now because of the hurricane, what a great organization that gets the most out of their pitchers.
Yeah.
I know a little bit about that organization, and they have incredibly smart people working there. The fact that they could be a 500 team with the kind of roster they had this past season is so impressive. So I think it'll be interesting. Obviously the real scuttlebutt is the kid's an arrogant kid. He pushed his way out of Japan, which is unheard of. The Dodgers are the national team in Japan for what everyone's telling you anyway. And why wouldn't he go somewhere else? And, you throw a little bit of a different perspective there. You know, personally, that what you say, if to give it some credence, Tampa would be a great spot for him to learn how to pitch. He needs to develop. He needs to learn how to be a professional pitcher, even though he's talented. And he's very, very young. And I think people forget that. He's 22 years old. But look, there's a lot of pitchers who Doc Gooden was dominating professional baseball at 19. So I guess, you know, I guess it's a matter of perspective in a lot of ways.
Well, Warren Spahn didn't win a game until he was 27. So and he went on to win 300. So there's something to be said for letting players grow into themselves. And I think that lesson is probably bigger with Sasaki than with most very powerful young men. But again, it's only one thing. And I was, as I said, this is just what people around him want and not necessarily what Sasaki wants. And that's, you know, the end decision. If Sasaki wants to go to the Dodgers, he's going to go to the Dodgers. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. But I think he's smart enough to listen to what people are saying. He was smart enough to listen to people who were going to help him go his own way and escape the gravity that Japan wants to put on people and get out of Japan as a 23-year-old, I think largely because of Shohei Ohtani. I don't know a pitcher if that's a great idea for a pitcher, because it's not like they're going to start seeing, you know, they're not batters who are going to be seeing regular 100-mile-an-hour fastballs every day like they can't in Japan, where it makes a ton of sense to go when you're 23. But if he wants to do it, if we take him at his word that he wants to be the best player in baseball, which is a line he stole from Shohei Ohtani, then he will make, if that's really him, he will make his decision based on what team offers him the, in his opinion, the best chance to be the best player. And but again, you don't know, people say things and, you know, say one thing and do another, but I think he's that's open. So right now, all I said was he's not a lock to sign with the Dodgers, and the trolls came from a parallel universe.
The Dodger fan base has become a bit like the Yankees fans of the 90s. You can't tell them. And the Yankees fans are showing their true stripes a little bit with how they're handling the Soto free agency. That's another story for another day. There is another pitcher, Tomoyuki Sugano, who has been rumored to be connected to the Mets, the Phillies, the Rangers, Anaheim, Milwaukee. Not exactly, maybe a little bit more hittable, not as dominant. I'm looking at some highlights from the World Baseball Classic. I don't know if that was the last one.
2017.
It's a little bit
semifinal against the U.S.
Yes, I'm looking at that right now, and I'm curious as we round it out here. I wanted to get your take. Is there something to be excited about there? I mentioned Imanaga earlier, who was very impressive lefty, and with the influx of talent from MPB, with the dearth of pitching. We don't really talk about offense so much. It's the pitching where everybody's looking at. Could there be bullpen arms available? Real quick, give us your take on Sugano and maybe some other names that potentially are not being talked about, because it's the winter of Sasaki now. So that's going to be the big topic that could be helpful pieces to a contending team like the Mets.
Well, Tomoyuki Sugano is a two-time winner of the Eiji Sawamura Award, which goes to the most impressive starting pitcher in either league in Japan in a season. Yamamoto won the last 3 years, but Sugano has had a lot of ups and downs since 2020. He's been really gone through the ringer. I think physically, I was unable to speak to him this year. The media situation in Japan really, it's really pretty bad still. They said, we like this bit about the good thing about Corona. The Japanese teams love Corona. It allowed them to get rid of the reporters.
You know, that wasn't just Japan. That wasn't just Japan. That was across American sports. It's much different since the COVID scenario.
Yeah, but when COVID stopped being a national emergency, they said, Oh, no, no, you're kidding. And they kept the
There's an emergency in the locker room. It's you, Jim Allen. It's you. You're the virus.
It's not me, but yeah, indeed. We're more dangerous than COVID because
sure.
We used to be on the field, never in the clubhouse, but we were on the field in the same way and in the dugouts before games. And now we are cordoned off, wearing our pariah status in some inaccessible place where the teams can keep an eye on us and keep, to know who the players are talking to. So, and the Marines are about the worst. The Lotte Marines are the absolute authoritarian tyrants of the media world. And I think that may be because of Sasaki. And once he's gone, perhaps we'll have normal access. I don't know. But we don't know what the situation is with him. I wasn't able to talk to Sugano, but he's a guy who really, unlike Sasaki, who's learning how to pitch and learning how to make adjustments on the fly on different mounds and different baseballs and different umpires and different, feel for his ball. And he knows all that stuff. So the MLB adjustment is just going to be another adjustment for him. He's 34 years old. He's coming off one of his best seasons of his career, but his first good season in 3 years. His command was exceptionally good this year. Part of his success is that he knows what he can get from Japanese umpires. So that's going to be a huge kind of a, that might be, I don't think he's expecting benefits, but he's fine-tuned his game to his situation, and that might be a problem.
If it's the corners, you don't get the corner. Well, you can get the corners. It's more north-south in baseball. What's funny is I was recently watching a clip from a 1999 game, mm-hmm. and I cannot believe what was called a strike. And it's like, I was like, whoa, that is not a strike. And I watched the game live. And I never remember saying that, watching it live. So
it used to be an MLB that they pretty much the ball had to be over the white of the plate.
Inside. Oh, if you hit the glove and it could have been 2 inches outside, they were going to give you a strike in 1999.
Well, it used to be they gave those outside strikes. That was the response to the 1960s, all the hit.
It was probably the response to steroids and home runs flying around.
Could be too, but in Japan they didn't have that, so the strike zone was horizontally much more sound. It's a little smaller vertically. You don't get the high strikes as much as you get in MLB. But Sugano knows what he's going to make that adjustment. Sasaki. He doesn't, as Bill James once says, he doesn't really know the strike zone from Swahili. So that probably won't trouble him as much because he's not really knowledgeable about the strike zone. It's really not part of his vocabulary. But Sugano knows that stuff. In one sense, he's very finely tuned to Japan, but he has that fine tunability. He's 34. I think somebody will say, let's see if this guy can be a back of the rotation for us and maybe surprise us. But as far as pitching goes, Alan Curry is coming over. He's got a really good changeup and a really good splitter. Not a Sasaki splitter, but his fastball is really, it's not that impressive. His father's was an American minor league baseball player. He spent the first 4 years of his life in America. Can't really speak English anymore, but he's a wonderful guy, and we share a name. So we've always been kind of close in that respect. We've been buddies for a while. Shinosuke Ogasawara is a lefty, but he's a little better than Naoyuki Uesawa, who is, I think, now in the minors with the Red Sox. He's a guy who throws a bunch of different pitches, used to look to be really, really good, and really hasn't been. So yeah. Those are the pitchers coming over, and as a first, and I'm guessing that the Giants, Kazuma Okamoto, who was dynamite in the WBC, hit a home run in the final. I think he hit the game-winning home run in the final against the United States, is going to be coming over as well.
Interesting. Do you one last thing. Do you watch any – I know he didn't really pitch this year. Senga, Kodai Senga, struggled in the postseason. Oh, tough spot for him. The Mets needed him. He was basically in spring training mode. I don't like shoulder injuries. He did far better in 2023 than I ever could expect. Had a great start against the Braves. Looked like he was going to be a big, big asset down the stretch, and they had that freak calf injury. I'm concerned about a couple of things. The shoulder, I don't like shoulder injuries. That's not going to change. There was some concerns about his health when he signed a couple of years ago. And then obviously the Mets are going to have to employ a six-man rotation. You put Sasaki in that rotation, I mean, you're going to have 12 starters to get through this season. And they do have some depth, so they could maybe get away with it. I'm joking, of course. But any final thoughts on Senga, if you have any? I don't know if you've stayed in touch with how he's done since he's come to the States.
Yeah, Senga is a remarkable individual. He seems to be one of those guys who doesn't let his past, you know, the past performances don't bother him. These past performances are things to learn from, not to dwell on. He seems incredibly sharp, incredibly friendly and personable. These are all things that are really, really good in MLB. A lot of Japanese guys come over to MLB, and if they're not outgoing enough, they can struggle if they're too shy. But he's not shy. He's incredibly modest and personable. If he's fit, he's going to pitch. Of course, we saw that against in the first postseason game. You know, okay, oh, he gives up a home run right off the bat, and then
Schwarber, and then he settled in a little bit,
and then he's dynamite. Now he wasn't, you know, he got taken apart in the second game, but still, you know, that's baseball.
Sure.
So I think he's going to be fine going forward. He's not.
Is he an ace? Is he an ace? Is he number two? I saw him as a number three guy that walks too many guys, will probably struggle against good offensive teams on the road. But I have to say his walks got better as he learned and he got used to the baseball. He has some gumption, and you don't really know him. His personality's flat. He's not charismatic. He's not.
You don't see it.
Because... And that's fine. I mean, he just wants to play baseball, and I'm okay with that. And that's actually for championship teams. A lot of times that's why championship teams win. It's about baseball at that point. So, you know, do you think he's a top of the rotation guy? Do the Mets have somebody if he's healthy?
I think he is, but the healthy is always, well, I think.
He's never going to give you more than 25 starts at 150 innings. Let's
call
it. Well,
you know, you don't know that. You don't know that. He had a reputation for being hurt often, but he didn't miss a lot of starts. Now he'll always, he's a major league pitcher. He's not in today's game. You know, who throws a quality start in every outing? Nobody.
No, nobody.
It just doesn't happen. And there are a few guys who are very consistent at the top end. He's not going to be one of them because he'll have a game. Yamamoto's the same. He'd have a game in Japan where he'd allow, you know, five runs in six innings once or twice a year. And then, like, nothing worked. And which is rare for him, but it happens to Senga a little more often. But he's very, you know, his stuff is really simple. You know, it's I'm going to come at you with this, and if it's anywhere near close to me, he's aggressive, he's tuned in, he doesn't let things doesn't seem to let things bother him, which is the mental, you know, the mental side, which is perfect for New York. And I think he could be an ace, but yeah. But again, when he joined the Mets, he was like their fourth starter because they had all these big guns who were then hurt and gone.
Yep, hurt and gone. So what do you got coming up? Obviously, you're going to be following the Sasaki news. Who knows what else is going to come out of Japan? You have the podcast. You have the Twitter account. You have your own personal website. Let all the listeners know, because I think as we go, this is our third year in a row, Jim, and I enjoy talking to you. And with the way things are going, I think we're going to be doing this more frequently, because I think the leagues are really starting to, I mean, I don't want to say a working agreement, but I think they're merging in a way where players are going to be going across. Wow. And there will be Americans going over there. There you've seen to go revive their careers as well.
Well, I think they do. And this is a big thing. And this is another reason Japanese baseball has gotten better and better because, in one respect, it's not, because we used to get, talked about this 30, 40 years ago, we got all these guys who would have been MLB quality, MLB regulars and stars, who teams gave up on because they didn't perform in 20 at bats in MLB, or they didn't perform, they gave them 100 at bats, and then they went over to Japan and they lit it up, and they're going, this guy couldn't play in MLB, but he's a superstar in Japan. Well, he would have been a star in America, but I mean, this was happened. But MLB teams are more, they're more woke to the qualities of their minor league players than they were 30 years ago. So we don't get that. But on the other hand, we get all these youngish guys who've had a taste of MLB, or they're stuck in AAA and they know they can play, and Japanese teams are going to give them reps, and Japanese teams are going to educate them about things that can help them be better players. And so you're seeing now better and better pitching in MLB, in NPB, because of the imports coming over, who basically are getting a chance to refine their games. And some of those guys are going to be coming back. And we see that a lot. So the imports are really helping pick up the game, forcing the Japanese to be better. It's really fun. But I think the biggest thing we're going to see, I hope to see, Japan's really shy about this. They like their, like some politicians, they like to complain about how they like to have grievances about how everybody's unkind to them, but they don't like to do anything about it except talk about it.
Sure.
So NPB really needs to rewrite the posting agreement.
Yeah.
You know, they need, after the WBC, this was so obvious. But I think the thing what they need with the posting agreement is is to make it so any players under 25 who go on minor league contracts, the first MLB that for the years under team control, they get a share of all that money. They not a share, they don't get, but the team has to fork over. Now, that's not going to fly with the player. I know the MLBPA will go,
won't be happy.
They won't
about
go
that,
but then Japan says, okay, well, there's no posting agreement. Sorry.
And then you have nobody coming over, and sounds like the Japanese athlete will probably have an issue, and I think eventually they'll figure it out. So
it will, but it has to have that give and take. I mean, this is what happened with Shohei Ohtani. They changed the rules, and the Nippon Ham Fighters were going to get nothing, and so it was going to be like, okay, well, Ohtani isn't coming. And, whoa, what do you mean he's not coming? Okay, we'll give you $20 million.
We'll give you that. There you go. Well, Jim, it's always a pleasure. You were very generous with your time. Let's keep in touch, and I'm looking forward to the next time. And who knows, if Sasaki signs with the Mets, maybe we'll be talking sooner than you think, but it'll be a fascinating offseason.
So, I will be at the winter meetings in Dallas. So we'll see if anything interesting happens there. Of course, that'll be before. I don't think Sasaki's going to be posted before the 15th of December.
No, I think they're going to want to get it into the 2025 international.
They are. And then it'll be a case of teams can say, well, if you wait until after January 15th, we can give you this. Or if you sign before January. So he'll have, by that time,
it'll be Valentine's Day, and that's going to be all funny.
Yeah. Well, everybody will know. He'll know what every team's best offer is.
And then he'll be able to make the choice. It'll be
exactly,
fascinating.
Exactly.
And the good part about it is at least he'll be able to choose from a baseball perspective. It's always about money, and he will get paid. If he is who we think he is, he'll eventually get paid. But it'll be about the best spot for him.
Yeah, and I think the answer, of course, if he's going to come out and say he wants to be the best player in the world, and he wants to copy Shohei Ohtani, All you got to do is think Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
There you go. Well, Jim, be well. Thank you so much for being generous with time. We'll do this again, my friend.
I think we'll talk to you next year.
Jim Allen, be well, Jim. Have a great night.
Okay.
Jim Allen, great stuff. We learned a lot here about Roki Sasaki. J Ball Allen, the Japanese Baseball Podcast. J Ball Allen at J Ball Allen on X. All right. Let's take a quick break, wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets Podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. I want to thank Jim Allen for joining me in the prior segment. Some interesting stuff about Roki Sasaki. And one of the things I think that came out that I guess was a bit surprising, maybe not so much. I think that's the problem with imports from Japan, is that they're expected to be the real deal from day one, but there may be some development. You saw it a little bit with Senga. It was a very small developmental period, but he needed a couple of months when he came over. Yamamoto struggled with injury and wasn't perfect from day one. Pitched fairly well in the postseason. But you're getting a pitcher that may not, you know, as good as he is and the potential he has and what have you, may need some time to get used to not only the country and the ball and the American baseball landscape, but learn how to pitch a little bit. He's still a very young kid. So something interesting from Jim Allen, as well as some of the other names that he brought up there. Obviously, we talked about Soto. We'll be on Soto Watch the rest of the week into really Thanksgiving and the winter meetings. It's really going to be all about Soto all the time. You know, maybe there'll be some marginal around the fringes moves. I have a feeling Soto is going to be holding up pretty much everything until, something breaks, at least for the Mets, the Red Sox, and the Yankees and the Blue Jays, perhaps. Some things coming up at Beyond the Mic, and if you haven't subscribed to the Substack newsletter, why not? For less than the price of a cup of coffee a month, you can get some great premium content. Tomorrow, I'm going to get into the Rule 5 draft and some roster protection. Who should the Mets tender a contract to? Who should the Mets protect? So we'll get into a little bit about that. Check that out. We continue with contributor David Mills to break down the roster and give some options for the Mets as they go into the offseason. Of course, whether it be commenting on the Garrett Crochet potential deal or some other options out there, we continue to give you thought-provoking content throughout the week in addition to this show. And look, if the Mets sign Soto, we'll do a couple of things. First, we'll definitely have a Spaces on X. Without a doubt, we'll have a Spaces on X. I will have an emergency show. And even if Soto doesn't sign, even if he doesn't sign, we probably should do that. And then, the Thanksgiving holidays coming up and that great weekend. I mean, things in baseball now tend to kind of take a little bit of a break during the holidays is interesting. Things never really rested back in the day during the hot stove. But now, actually, teams kind of have this, and even agents and players, like they want to take the holidays off and actually have some sort of life during a time of the year where the rest of the world, the rest of the country at least, is trying to enjoy some time away from their daily grind. Baseball's a 24/7, 365 grind. As you know, as part of our tagline here at the Talking Mets podcast, we're always here. We're covering the Mets, whether it's Christmas, New Year, Thanksgiving, 4th of July. Even on election night, I'm out there tweeting about the Mets. I mean, come on, think about that. An historic election, and here I am tweeting about the Mets. So anyway, we'll leave that in the back burner. And looking forward, we'll be talking Soto and obviously some other stuff I'm sure will come up. So continue to check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X, as I said, at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And as I said, for less than the price of a cup of coffee, don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks of the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody. Be the Mets. Be the-